Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, and welcome to Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. With me, Rich Herring, my guest this week is Lauren Laverne. If you're enjoying these podcasts, there's lots of ways you can help us out, but one is just to come down and see it if you are in London or nearby. We're kind of try and do some of them elsewhere. There's one coming up in York at the end of July if you're in the Yorkshire area, so do look out for us. But they're mainly in London just because of economic reasons that we have no money. So go to the Leicester Square Theatre website and you can buy tickets to the remaining shows. We've got some fantastic guests coming up, like Graham Linehan and Russell Kane and Tim Minchin, Sophie Hagen, and some people we haven't yet booked. So even I don't know who's coming. So go to leicestersquaretheatre.com. If you can't do that, go to gofasterstripe.com/badges and buy a badge, either monthly or one-off, and that would be lovely. Thank you. Here's Lauren Laverne and me. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who yesterday was at a baby disco. It's all right, he's got a baby. It's allowed. Please welcome Richard Herring. Thank you very much. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. Or as I was at a breakdancing competition on Saturday. It's down under the National Theatre and those places down there. The cool kids there were calling it Rehearlestapa. So I don't know about that. So yeah, I was yesterday. I was a baby. I've got a baby, so it's all right. I've reproduced finally in my life, and I've got a 16-month-old baby. We took it to a baby disco. It was very exciting. It was good, a lot of fun, but you can really only go if you've got a baby. That's the thing. If you turn up without, I'm not sure they'll let you in if you don't have a baby. So it's worth having a baby to be able to go to the baby disco, because it's a lot of fun seeing them dancing around. So I enjoyed that. I'm not strange. And this week I was also invited to Westminster Abbey. I live a life. Don't I? What a life I have. You must envy me. It was an after hours Westminster Abbey. It's like Hollyoaks after hours. It's all a bit sexier. The choir boys come out. It all goes sweet. And just sing stuff. What are you thinking? And I was shown around Westminster Abbey with Sherry Blair was there. It was for Scope, who I'm a patron of. It's a charity, and she's also a patron. But it must be weird for Sherry Blair going around Westminster Abbey, because they've got all the, you know, the dead prime ministers there commemorated. And you kind of think, well, one day you'll be in here, won't you, commemorating, unless he gets taken to Strasbourg and executed for war crimes. She'll be in there in the Westminster Abbey. I saw her do a little jig over the spot where Tony Blair's gone. I might just have imagined that. But you can't be buried in Westminster Abbey anymore. They don't put people's bones in there anymore. The last person who was buried in there is the unknown soldier from 1920. And no one knows who he is, but he's in there. And I'd quite like to be buried in Westminster Abbey. So I think I might just, when I feel like I'm about to die, like an elephant, return to the elephant graveyard, I'm just going to sneak in there one night and kind of climb into Edward Longshanks' tomb and hide in there. No one will know where they'll be in there. Or I thought I could be buried as the unknown comedian. I mean, it's not an anonymous thing. It'd just be Richard Herring. No, we just put one bloke in. No one knows. Anyway, if you skip the intro, because that bloke on YouTube puts in the time that the show actually starts. Oh, actually, he usually skips this bit as well. Please help us film this series by going to www.gofasterstripe.com/badges and giving us a quid or two if you think this podcast is worth anything to you at all. And I'm also on tour coming up soon next year with a new show called The Best. But enough about me, enough of my yakking. We've got a very exciting guest for you today. She is probably best known as the narrator of 99 Ways to Lose Your Virginity. I can only think of three. Will you please welcome Lauren Laverne, ladies and gentlemen? It's Lauren Laverne. Come in. Sit down here. Sit down. Pick up a microphone. You've got to talk. It's like this. It's like the old days. You've got to talk into the microphone.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. Hey, thanks for coming.
Lauren Laverne, if that is your real name.
No, it's not.
It's a stage name. That's very exciting. So tell us about 99 Ways. Do you remember 99 Ways to Lose Your Virginity? And can you list all 99?
Vaguely. I think I tried about 63. I do remember it.
Yeah.
I think just a voiceover job, that one,
yeah,
as far as I recall. In the halcyon days of all that kind of... Well, a lot of that sort of satellite TV of the 90s,
yeah,
which for me, I remember very fondly, and is where I kind of cut my teeth and learned how to present and also do voiceovers. That's all gone now, you know, like the kind of UK plays,
yeah,
and so forth that we had. There was plenty of that kind of work around then. And now I think it's sort of a shame. Obviously, you've got a lot of kind of online possibilities, but I kind of look around and I think, oh, well, where do you learn to present when you're 25? You know, there's no kind of pop world.
You've got to set this up yourself.
Exactly.
And do this.
This
is what I've decided to do. Yeah. You suggested this one, which I didn't take up. You did a show which I couldn't find. It was called Select a Bow.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was saying to Richard that, yes, if you did want to introduce me, I don't think it is actually on the internet. I can't say I've looked that hard, to be fair. But it was a gig I did called Select a Bow, which I think dates it perfectly. It was a dating show. You already know when it was, 2001 show. And it just was a job that involved me. I can't really remember what the logic behind this was, but it was me travelling the length and breadth of the country in the nation's longest limousine, right? So, like, at first, me and the crew that filmed it, we were like, we're not going in the limousine. We'll feel like dicks. And then, obviously, you literally last about 20 minutes, and then you're like, we're going to go. It's so roomy. We're going to go in there. It's so roomy. And, like, this was pre-kind of Twitter and the internet, so there was a lot of sort of being bored on the road when you were driving between towns. And me and one of the girls on the programme developed a game where we'd put one of the same pair of shoes on each. So I'd take a left, she'd take a right. All the windows were tinted, and then we'd just put one leg out of each window. So people would be like driving along the motorway and just went, what? When they kind of went past us, just for fun.
Yeah, and that's probably better than the actual show. That joke.
That went well.
They should have made that the show.
No, it was, do you know what?
Responses.
Yes, it was quite a time. What a time it was to be alive.
So I've had a lot of fun today looking back, because, you know, this is, you're a very young woman still, but you've got a very long career because you started as a, literally as a tiny child.
Literally as a, like, I look back now and it's terrifying. I think, why, you know, what were, and how different times were, yeah, to be a teenage girl in the music industry then. Was, yeah, wow. So yes, no, started off in the band when I was 15, so I'm 38 now, so
right, yeah,
so been at it a while.
I was watching Kinnicky videos, and it's, they're very charming. I mean, it's a little bit of nostalgia of the 90s, it has to be said, and it's good music, but also it's a band of three girls and your brother.
My brother, we got engaged yesterday.
Oh. I thought you'd, looking at him in those videos, I thought he would never get. But, I mean,
he's come into his own.
But then you're very, you know, you're young girls, but you're very normal looking girls, really, I think it's fair to say. Very pretty girls, but very normal looking girls,
yeah,
which I don't know whether you would get that in body type terms as well. You know, it's just, it's that you're not X-factored up, and it's a sort of punk band, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. You know, I mean, we were... Well, it was funny because, obviously, we came out of... Not obviously, but we came out of a kind of underground sort of punk scene in the Northeast. And when we were offered a record deal, I kind of thought it would be like... Does anybody remember the opening titles to The Jetsons, right? Where you kind of... You know, you get put on a conveyor belt and then, like, cool stuff would come down and then they'd change your outfit and then you'd be, like, you know, make your hair pink and it would just be really awesome. And the discovery at that point, which has been consistent throughout my career, is that you then sit down in the room and it's just like a dude going, so what do you want to do? And, you know, you have to kind of make it up. So we were obviously just sort of doing our best and working out who we were, really.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a funny thing to navigate that now. I think I've only really had a clear view on that time in recent years.
Yeah.
Because it was, I mean, as much as it was tons of fun, it was great. It was quite a odd way to spend your kind of 16 to 21, I think, when the band broke up. Like, that's a very weird time to be... doing something like that where, you know, people are going, hey, can you make some more definitive statements? And you're just like, sure. Like, you don't know anything, you know.
But it looks like, I mean, it's fun music and, you know, I can imagine lots of indie boys were falling in love with you everywhere you went. And
boys, girls, all sorts,
Must have been quite good fun. Wish I'd been in a pop band. It would have been good. Wouldn't have been a very good band. But so how did it become? How did this? Because you were at school. You met at school or different colleges. You met the other girls.
Yeah, we were friends from school, and then I think in the GCSE summer, you know, that really long one where you stop going for ages, and you just like we just went to loads of parties and gigs and stuff, and we were at a party in just outside Newcastle. In a place called Morpeth, a house party, and we bumped into some people from a local label.
Right.
And we kind of talked about having a band. We hadn't done anything about it. You know, we were just like, yeah, we should get a band. It'd be really cool. And obviously, when they said, oh, we run a label, actually, we were like, yeah, I've got a band. We've got a band. And didn't. So then they went like, oh, well, we'll have a demo for you. And then it was like, shit! So we went home, and my brother, who had been, he'd had his first four-track when he was nine, you know, so was ever the studio nerd, is now doing his PhD in engineering and music production and stuff. And he recorded our demo. And originally we called him, the name, my name, Lauren Laverne, and his name, which in the band was Johnny X, they were just what I put on the poster, because we thought, they said, you can do a gig. We're like, shit, we had to write some songs. We had, you know, it's like all very rapidly constructed. And the names I just put on the bottom of the poster.
Right.
And then we kind of fly posted it around town to advertise this gig that like three people obviously went to. We thought it was going to be massive. And so that's where my name
You just made up a name?
We didn't know who would drum for us, so we kind of put, oh, Johnny X, like whoever drums. And then it obviously ended up being my brother Pete's name for like the next, you know, 15 years or whatever. And still some many corners of the internet. He's like, yeah, thanks very much for that. Thank you.
But you're still called Lauren Laverne. It's name. So.
It's weird. Well, now it's funny because my kids actually take the piss out of us. They'll call us it in public. They know I hate it in public when they say it. Because I'm like, it's Mummy! It's Mummy! But my little one thinks it's Duverne, so he doesn't even get it right. He's like, Lauren Devern. He spoke. I'm like,
I think David Baddiel told the story. I think he told it on this podcast, but it was in his show anyway, where he was changing his daughter. Sometimes calls him David Baddiel. And he was changing his daughter's nappy in the gents' toilet, and you know, and just in the clothes thing, and she went, David Baddiel. That's the little girl's voice coming.
There's no, absolutely, like, zero ego as far as kids are concerned. The DGAF, who you are, mate. So, yeah.
So you're from Sunderland, my family are from Middlesbrough, so obviously we're kind of mortal enemies, really.
We're supposed to be rivals,
yeah, that's right.
Right.
Yeah. And Newcastle, we don't like. We don't like anyone from near, though I'm not really from Middlesbrough, so I'm going to let it slide. How did you feel about the Barnes Park restoration? Do you think it's...
The Barnes Park restoration, yeah. Absolutely thrilled. To grow up opposite Barnes Park, and right. I think it's a beautiful park. There's a lovely bandstand.
Yeah.
The pond, it had a stream running into it, which had become blocked.
Right.
So I was absolutely delighted. Also, our Diane's living over that way now. So with the bend, she got to make good use of it, you know, with baby Ruth. So
is there a cannon in there as well? Have you seen the cannon?
Of course I've seen the cannon. Yeah. Yeah, no, sure. There was rumoured an eel in the lake, which... would eat the legs of children who fell in. I went to St Mary's Primary, which is just a few hundred yards from Barnes Park. Right. So the legend of the eel spread about that far. Very pleased, yeah.
Yeah, good. And did you?
The seafront's looking lovely as well. If you're right. Interested, Richard.
I'm not. I'm more interested in Barnes Park. It's the biggest park in Sunderland.
It is. Yeah.
Did you?
Which you would think with Mowbray Park being in the town centre.
Yeah.
But no.
When you were going to the town centre, did you prefer the 5 or the 35 bus?
Well, I used to get... Oh, now, let me think. I think it was the 13 I got into town. But I was close enough to walk, only being at the Barnes. It wasn't that far, as I'm sure you'll know.
I did. I'm very, very aware of all of that. And there's a great. The one thing I found in it, I like going back to old interviews, and they thought this sounded like an interesting story that was just mentioned. But you skipped PE lessons at school in quite an imaginative way. Do you remember this?
Oh, by buying the prefect's badge.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, that was just. It just seemed quite practical to me. Yeah. There was. I just realised that the prefect badge. They'll never have us back now. At school. I mean, I didn't have the best time at school. You know, it was easy to be different when and where I grew up, I think. And didn't like going to lessons very much. And so I just thought, well, where do they get those badges, like the prefect badges and the librarian ones? And, of course, it was just from a shop in town. So I just went and bought one of each. And then instead of going to PE, which I now regret because I think I disengaged with sport when I was about 11, which is like the classic girl thing to do. And it's quite sad in some ways. But... I did go and I just used to sit in the library wearing my librarian's badge, reading the Melody Maker. And there was only one time when the teacher who was in charge of the library kind of like half rumbled as he came in and he went, "When did I make you a librarian?" And I just went, "Ages ago."
And he "Look, I've got the badge. Where would I get the badge from?"
Yeah, check it out. And it was great. So obviously, subsequently, all of the kind of Melody Maker learnings, they've been quite useful. You've been a DJ at Six Music now. That comes in quite handy. But at the time, it wasn't really clear where
it's
that was
brilliant
going.
The way that worked. I mean, it's like the Colditz or something. Yeah, look, I'm allowed to go out. I've got a badge. Like, no one goes, "No, you're not a librarian." Oh, she's got the badge. And you'd think the bloke at the shop would be under some kind of contract.
He wasn't bothered. He was just,
just thought, "I've sold two more badges."
Yeah,
jokes. 50p.
Exactly. I think as well, it's one of those sort of early lessons where a lot of it was because my dad, because I'm from a family of teachers,
right.
You know, you've kind of seen the other side of it. So, like, you've actually seen your dad... sitting marking degree papers, just being like really frustrated that this certain university's candidates never put their candidate number in the right place or that people can't spell. And so I kind of got the sense quite early that actually if you were making someone's life kind of easy, not really getting in the way, they probably just want a quiet life. Do you know what I mean? Was the vibe. So when it came to exams and stuff, I'd always kind of try and make sure that I just punctuated, made it easy to read, made it kind of make sense. So they want to give you the mark. Do you know what I mean? It was that kind of thing. He didn't want to have the conversation. I just had to say it was ages ago. We could both know it was a lie. But, you know, perhaps that was how I felt it went anyway.
It's good. But I think you said as well that you slightly regretted missing out on going to college as a result of doing the...
I went to college. I did A-levels.
Right.
And then I didn't go to university. I had a place to go to university, but put that off because then the band got the record deal. Mm. I mean, A-levels was funny because the band was at the same time. So it was like properly doing your coursework in the back of a van full of roadies kind of thing, which was quite... I always think, like, you know, at some point, there's something I've got to write about that, about being kind of partially raised by roadies.
Right, yeah.
It's like the wisdom of the road crew is just, like, that's so... I got to do this in, you know, doing my job. I'm sure you do a few, like, awards ceremonies and stuff. One of my favourites, if you ever get to go, you should, although it is a hard drinking event, is the kind of road crew, roadies, lighting riggers, technicians awards.
Right.
And they arrive at 9 a.m. and start drinking, and it starts at 9 p.m. It is hard fucking core. But also, you can imagine the rig, because it's just all their best gear. So it's like an episode of The X Factor. Nobody is nominated by their actual name. They're all called things like Paul, Young Paul, Big Kev, Phil the Greek. Like, everybody's nominated by their nicknames, and it's just the best vibe. Like, I love that. Being in a band, that was one of my favourite things, was, like, knowing all the road crews. I mean, I mentioned Paul and Young Paul. They were actually a father and son,
right.
Two roadies that I knew who used to roadie for my ex-boyfriend's band, and they were just fabulous people.
Yeah.
And so that there's something about, like, being a teenage girl and... you know, them kind of like taking you under their wing a bit. And, you know, if you get a bad throat, they'll kind of make you some weird tincture to fix it. And, you know, there was one guy who just used to love wild swimming before that was even a thing. And he had this long hair. And like, whenever you'd get to a town that was near the sea, he just used to jump out of the van. Just out the lights, he'd just be off. And you'd know that he'd just gone to find the sea and swim in it. He'd usually turn up in time for loading, but not always.
He hadn't been swept away.
He was roading for Kasabian last I saw him. Still around. That's my kind of equivalent of policeman getting younger. As soon as I knew the roadies before I knew the bands, I was like, oh, there's been a shift here.
But you read a lot. Did you enjoy Kurt Vonnegut's Man Without a Country?
Oh, I love that. Yeah, I've read that a few times now. It's got Vonnegut's Blues in it, which is it's probably my favourite essay about music. It's absolutely amazing essay.
Right.
If you've, yeah, never read it, you should.
Good. I've been wondering, your Instagram feed is very useful in terms of finding, I know everything you've been doing for forever. It's very exciting. You were a zombie in Shaun of the Dead as well.
I was actually their first zombie.
Were you?
And so I'm not on in the film, but in the DVD extras, I'm the first one because when they were going for funding, Edgar Wright, who directed and wrote it, is an old mate of mine, and he said they just needed some of their friends to be made up as zombies so that they could show people from the film companies like what it would look like. So we all went down to this studio in the middle of nowhere, and it was like me and Simon Pegg and a few other, and they were all like, everybody else was like proper actors, and I was so shit. Like, I cannot tell you how shit I was. It was awful, but it was kind of lucky because I was so thin in those days and so pale. They just went, "Well, do you first. You won't take much." So we're going to make her reasonably fresh because she's a bit like that anyway. So they just kind of put a bit of dark circles in there. And then I couldn't keep a straight face because it was so ridiculous. So I think in the DVD extras, it's just Simon Pegg calling me Giggle Zombie and laughing. But obviously they did then get the funding and make a film. And then quite a few years later, Edgar did this little short. So when Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez released a double bill together that was designed to be watched as a double bill.
Yeah.
And Edgar, because he's made both of theirs, made a fake trailer for a 70s horror in the middle. So I'm in that.
Oh.
As a zombie, and so I'm a kind of flapper 1920s zombie,
right.
Unsuccessfully sexing up Mark Gatiss with a feather boa. So you know, I kind of like eventually got on screen, but it took a while.
Wow, that's good. I'm impressed with myself for getting that out of you. So I'm going to ask you some emergency questions. What I've been doing this series on the emergency questions partly is. Googling what is a good question. And
God, I've never done that. I've never done that.
Then see what comes up. So these are some of the questions.
Such a good idea, Richard. This is I'm learning here.
This is from buzzkenya.com.
Go on.
Is there anything purple within 10 feet of you?
Well, yes, but I can't see it, is the obvious answer to that.
It's an odd question, isn't it? I don't think it's like for when you're on the phone, it's just that's a question. That's a question to ask on a date. They're just testing whether the person can distinguish.
I think it might be in Princess House. Like, I was like, it's weird.
All right, this is a new one. This is from buzznigeria.com. Which are your two favourite careers and why? I don't think they have to be your own careers. What are your two favourite
just
careers?
Just generally?
Yeah, and why?
Okay, my two favourite careers. Number one, I'm going to say paramedic, because, you know, what a great contribution they all make to our quality of life and the lengthening of lives. And number two, I'm going to say teacher. Because I think, you know, teachers are the underrated heroes and superstars and all that stuff.
That's true. All my family are teachers, so they'll like you now if they watch. They don't really like me, so they'll be watching this. Okay, this is from Ali's Randomage. Have you ever flown a kite?
Yes.
Yeah,
many times. Yeah. Pretty well. I mean, you know, growing up in a seaside town, obviously coastal, a kite is classic kind of British beach thing, isn't it? But I most recently flew one in Cornwall last year, and it was really good. The kids were really impressed. I very rarely do things that impress my kids, and that was one of them, so I was really kind of milking it.
When I went out with Julia Swallow, I was mentioning backstage, she was quite obsessed with kites. She nearly died about three times in our short relationship. She was run over. She was nearly properly run over again when we were on holiday.
Oh, no.
And once she went to this kite festival, and then we had this quite high-powered kite. And she said to the guy, can I have a go? And he said, yes. And she grabbed it and took off.
She's only weighed, John. Wow.
So that would be my
question. Yeah, there's a lot of... Yeah. Oh, you really have to...
She was lifted off the ground. They grabbed her.
There's nothing of her. How far did she get?
Quite a little way. You know, yeah. She was airborne.
That's like 3 seconds of abject terror.
It
sounds like quite an adrenaline-soaked relationship, though.
It was, you know. I kind of was hoping she would die, to be honest. But she... she by that stage...
Because
when you're that age, I knew I wanted to get out of the relationship, but it's really hard, isn't it, to get out of relationships? If someone dies, that's an easy way out. No, you know, I wouldn't have murdered her.
You are an awful, awful man.
I am quite bad. MarshallJonesJr.com, 100 questions to ask people.
Think that counts? Go on.
Have you ever tried sushi?
Well, sure, Marshall and Richard. The answer is yes. Yeah. I enjoy sushi from time to time. Well, I'm vegetarian, so it tends to be quite boring. Just the basic California roll for us. Not any fancy schmancy stuff.
You know, they've all been good questions. They've all got something. I love that. Have you ever tried sushi? It's like, how can I be sophisticated? I'll ask my date, have you ever tried sushi? Yeah.
That is someone who's never spoken out loud to another human being. I mean, God love him, whoever he is. It's hard, though, isn't it? I mean, interviews are funny. Like, as someone who interviews people for a living, big part of my job anyway, like, you are probably quite a shit interviewee, I think, because, I'm more used to asking questions than answering them, for sure.
But also, I think when you've got a brilliant interviewer like me, I will ask. Because I've been interviewed as well. I know, most people don't ask, is there anything purple within 10 feet of you? And that is what makes...
You never don't.
That's what makes me different than everyone except the person who came up with that question.
It's thinking outside the box. That's what it's all about, isn't it?
I got fed up with people stealing my emergency questions, so I thought I'd steal other people's emergency questions. People keep on asking my emergency questions on their podcasts and stuff to properly famous people.
Oh, really?
That I can't get, like Jodie Foster. No offence. But... she'd rung up today and said, I just gone, oh, Lauren, it's not happening.
To be fair...
It's been cancelled.
To be fair, I would hope that you could be honest and I'd go, yeah, that's fair, James, it's Jodie Foster.
But she did.
Tallulah from Bugsy Malone, fuck off.
She didn't. Oh, I do a thing called citation needed for your Wikipedia page. If there's a citation needed, I'd like to sort out. Yours, you've got one citation needed on your Wikipedia page. It's not a very good one, and you'd think this would be quite easy for someone to find out. It says, she has been a panellist on Just a Minute. Citation needed! Have you been a panellist?
I haven't. No. No, I've never done Just a Minute, actually. So that is unbelievably for Wikipedia. Incorrect.
They were right to put citation needed up there, weren't they? Whichever person went. I'm in my Wikipedia page, because I edit my own Wikipedia page. But surely everyone. I mean, you would do. And I don't add.
But it changes back, right? If you haven't got. If you're not one of the people, the Wiki Luminati, who are allowed to actually access it and edit, it just changes back.
Well, if they don't like it, but anyone's allowed to edit anything. So I edit it openly under my own name. It's not like I'm going in. Just put facts in, and then they've gone, you know, this page now needs looking at because. But I don't put Rich Herring is the greatest comedian ever, though that doesn't even need a citation. doesn't even need a link, it's just true. I just like to say, I did a series, you know, he.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not an idiot. He did.
I love him, it was the only first person Wikipedia page I did.
But you're not allowed to put.
And it just got really emotional.
But
like halfway through, it just became like a really personal, like deep, dark confessional, like dark night of the soul. Yeah. And then kind of goes into, you know, filmography or whatever.
But I kind of like the people who are, you know, who are the gatekeepers of Wikipedia are so, I mean, they're so humorless for a start. And they take themselves very, very seriously. So they kind of. This whoever it is now is a big thing saying, warning, this page is edited by someone close to the subject. I think if I was doing it under a false name, then that would be. I don't think that's what. Because you don't know you people because, you know, you're not interesting enough to have a Wikipedia. But I.
The only time I've ever looked at mine, because obviously Laverne isn't my real name, when I needed to get a visa to work in America. I had to print it off and take it in to the US embassy to sort of show them that because, you know, sometimes you're working under this other name, so it's a little bit complicated to explain that, well, I'm going to do this job, but it's under this. And that was, like, absolutely harrowing to have to, because I hate reading anything about myself or looking at anything like that.
And did they say, hey, it says you were on Just a Minute here, but I happen to know you were
I'm
not.
A big fan of the show, man. You're lying to a federal officer. You should this wait. Is US soil.
Well, what we have to do is either you have to go on Just a Minute to make it true.
Yeah.
Or I'll just go and delete it. I think I'm allowed to delete stuff off your page.
Go for it, yeah.
I'm going to change loads of stuff. It's going to be great. Let's have a look. So, I was on Late Night Women's Hour. You've got an amazingly diverse career where you've written a novel, you're presented on all of the radio stations
in
the world.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 now. Woo! BBC-wise, how about me? No, I've still
not. What about 7?
No LBC yet. 7, yeah, no, I haven't done 7 yet. That's relatively new. But
what about the one extra?
No, 1X. One I need X. To get on one. Need to, you know, maybe I could do. You could do a little simulcast or something. If there's a band that's got enough crossover, that'd be good.
But I was. It's a very good program, Late Night Women's Hour. How many hours do women need, though? Really, that's 2 hours they've got now.
I know it's gone too far, hasn't it? Really, this women's lib.
It's political correctness. I thought it was going to be like Hollyoaks After Dark, this is the second time I've referenced that program today. It's from 2004, Hollyoaks After Dark. That's a 12-year-old reference. But it was disappointing, and it was all men on when I did it.
It was interesting, actually, because it was the only one I've ever done. I've done quite a few now where it was an all-male panel, and because it's normally all female, but it was about masculinity, that episode. And it was really interesting, the difference in, you know, between the usual kind of, you were all standing up, like, pouring each other wine, like, everybody was shouting. It was a lot more voluble than, although not all weeks, because some weeks, some months it could be kind of, you know, equally shouty and it doesn't really matter what the gender of the guest is. But it was it was a different atmosphere, which was interesting. Yeah.
Obviously, once they...
You're legging each other on.
The subject's masculinity, so the call came straight through to Richie Herring.
This guy.
Let's get him on.
This guy.
He'll tell you all about it. There was a real prick guy on that. I really hated him. Should have had a fight with him.
I can't think who you mean, Richie.
But so that, I mean, it's quite a diverse. So you're doing the Glastonbury coverage and pop music, and you're doing this. It's a very thoughtful show, the Woman's Hour.
It's quite thinky.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, it's a mix really, and co-founded a website which I spend a lot of time working on as well, the pool, which we're very proud of, and. I do things like, I do actually just released an album on iTunes.
Have you?
Yeah, because I do a kids' show now. So I do a CBeebies show called Tea and Mo, which is really lovely. So it's just really funny because that was the first singing I'd done in like 18 years where they said, oh, this has got songs. You know, do you want to do a couple? So I did, and then they've done an album on iTunes now. So it was really sweet and really, it just, that felt like the right reason to kind of do singing again to me. But I did feel very old that, like, iTunes hadn't been invented the last time I was. It's like, wow, that's not good, is it?
That's awesome. Do you get to hang out with the other CBeebies presenters when you work on CBeebies?
No, I mean, it's just voice at the minute, but I'm hoping that there'll be some kind of, like, symposium, like corporate away day. I'd like to do some trust exercises with Mr. Tumble.
Yeah.
I'd just like to fall into his arms. I know he would catch me.
I think he's... I'd really like Justin and Mr. Tumble, the two different guys. Justin in particular takes any opportunity to do a slapstick. It's
very physical work.
I think it spoils the slapstick because he has to manoeuvre things into his face, basically. So if he was drinking some water, it'd be like, oh, I'll have some water. Oh, it's literally that. I mean, that is not funny, is it? You need more than that. You can't just chuck stuff at yourself.
I just like that. This is like, it's spoken with the kind of siege mentality that develops in the parent of young children who just can't escape. And you are going to spend however long with Mr. Tumble and, you know, with the Something Special guys. And you just have to bear down on that pain.
He's a phenomenon, though, isn't he? I mean, it's amazing because to look at him, you wouldn't think he's going to go on to be a very successful children's entertainer. You think he might go on to be very something with children. He might be the most successful... in a different branch of working with children. But you wouldn't think... Because, you know, he's just like a bloke, isn't he? He's just a chubby bloke.
Have you ever seen the footage of Camp Festival when Mr. Tumble does a live PA and he comes on stage? And, I mean, if you think Rudimentals fans go bonkers at a festival, where they go, like, the kids go absolutely apeshit. And it's the camera's shaking and... It's terrifying. It's an empire.
Yeah, well, it's amazing. But I haven't seen your show, and it's on your show. What time is it on?
I think, well, at the minute, it's really new. So we've just done a couple. So we did, they had played one of the songs out as the bedtime song a few weeks ago. So they're kind of coming round a bit.
Because I tend to watch it when I've woken up at 6 o'clock in the morning and I don't want to do anything.
Yeah.
So I put it
on. Kind of prawn hours.
This. And this, it's very good. My daughter loves watching everything, but I watch from about 6 till 8. So I don't think you're on at that time.
No, I'm not. But if you get the app, she's probably a bit small for it now, but we've got kind of games. So with one of the Tea and More, there's a selection of games.
Oh, no, we've got that somewhere.
I'm in that. There's a going to the toilet game, which my kids find that I have voiced hilarious. They're like, Mummy says poo! Like, any time anything like that happens. It happened on the Turner Prize coverage a couple of times, to be fair. They quite enjoyed that, where we'd had some kind of copper-like sculpture that I was discussing. And then sometimes it comes up during Tea and More, you know, just swings around about.
I'm doing a lot of that. I'm doing modern art at the moment. I'm in a modern art festival.
Are you?
I just mentioned it. I don't think it'll have gone out yet. It's called Tempting Failure. It's transgressive art.
All right.
So the man on before me is cooking his own poo.
Bold.
And there's a lady in the next room, I think, doing karaoke with her vagina.
We've all been there.
And I'm playing myself at snooker and commentating on it. I genuinely am. I'm very much looking forward to it, but I'm a big fan of transgressive art.
I'm trying to picture the dressing room situation backstage. As everybody's prepping for a show, Richard just chalking his cue, feeling a little bit self-conscious.
They're all looking again. That guy doesn't even get his genitals out at all. He doesn't urinate or anything.
Yeah. He just flushes afterwards. What's that about?
I think I might try and piss in a glass during it. It's going to be filmed, though.
Yeah.
But I've probably can do it, you know.
Might trying to think, yeah. I think the last time I handled still warm urine during a broadcast was when the traffic jam around the Brits had been quite long and Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers had done a piss in a bottle and then gave it to me to hold while I interviewed him. And, you know, if there were... Because people think, like, showbiz is all ritzy-glitzy and stuff, but there are always plenty of those moments to bring you back down to earth where you're like, wow, this is, mate, this is a bit hot. Like, are you okay? I did give it back to him at the end.
Yeah, he wanted it back, presumably, because he could have just put it on the floor and just tipped it away.
I mean, well, it was on the... To be fair, it was on the red carpet, so okay. I'll just give you that.
That doesn't stop the Red Hot Chili Peppers, that's the... They're crazy.
In the words of their song.
But all of their wees are all exactly the same. Wee after wee. All exactly the same wee. I hate the Red Hot Chili. I hate the Red Hot Chili Peppers. I used to. You're not allowed to say that when you're on. So when I did Six Music, I would we'd play the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and I go, I hate them. That is shit. They're all, so I didn't say shit, but they're all their songs are exactly the same. And I would get into trouble because you're not allowed to say what you think. We're not allowed to say bad things about music. Is that still the case?
No, it's not still the case. I mean, I think you can kind of broadly say what you want. I think that's a bit, for me, that would feel a bit rude. Like
yeah,
if I get
rude. No, it's not as rude as releasing the same song over and over again and getting and earning millions of dollars.
I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying, Rich. Hopefully it wouldn't come up. I try and, you know, occasionally there might be one that I'm not so keen on that we're kind of supporting as a station, and I try and just, you know, if you can't say anything nice and all that, just do a simple back ref and leave it at that.
That's why you're still on Six Music and I'm not. So mainly, not just that. I've got more new emergency questions I'm very keen to try out. What do you consider to be the most mediocre chocolate bar? That's my one.
That's a good one. A really good one. I'll tell you what I think it is. I think it's the Ripple. What's the point? What is the fucking point of a Ripple? It's just like, it's not quite a flake. It hasn't got anything interesting in it. It's just all it's got is more of the same, but in Ripple form. But it's not actually flaky.
No.
It's just like, why bother? There's no biscuit in there. There's no caramel. Are you joking?
It's slightly like they lost confidence as well, isn't it? They kind of think, we'll make a flake, and they went, oh, but what if that's too flaky?
Yeah.
Let's cover it in chocolate.
Yeah, it's like, it's got air in it, but it's not enough of a feature to call it an aero. Pathetic. Good. Get out.
If you could murder one person and have an 87% chance of getting away with it, who would that person be?
Wow. To quote Lovejoy in Game of Thrones, violence is a disease and you don't cure it by spreading it to more people.
That whammed him, though.
It was an emotional episode, that. I can't believe he was only in it for 5 minutes.
Well, let's not do any spoilers.
Let's not.
The other day, after the Hodor episode, I just put, Hodor, meaning, that's why he got his name. Before, because I'd seen it on.
Oh, and you got told off.
And everyone, I literally just put, Hodor. Mm. And then people go, spoilers! It's not a spoiler to mention the name of a character. No. Because they assume, that means he's going to die. And he did die.
They should try.
That wasn't what I meant, though. So they weren't that. I was just going, that's why he's called Hodor.
People are really sensitive about spoilers these days, right?
Yeah.
They should try Growing Up with My Dad and looking for a film to watch on Sky Movies on a Saturday night, because he literally just sit there going, he dies, that's sad. They're being harvested for their organs. And just like go through the entire list and it's like that. And you're like, Dad, I haven't seen any of these. You won't watch
with that, though, with that Game of Thrones episode, right, where Hodor was holding the door. Everyone was shouting at him, hold the door, at the time. Was it necessary for Bran to go back into the past to implant that in his brain so that he just said that for the rest of his life? And if he was going to do that, why didn't he go, say, don't go into the dream state and touch the ice bloke? That's what he should have been saying all the time. And then wait for the other bloke to come with you. Don't do it on your own. He could have been saying that all the time.
Yeah.
And then when he got there, oh, that's why he says that, because I must have gone back and programmed him to do that.
I mean, as much as I love Game of Thrones, yeah, and I do very much enjoy it, I think if you're going to start picking apart the shimmering and beautiful tapestry that it is...
All the things he could have stopped by going back in the past, and he held the door for a bit, which he would have done because they were shouting, hold the door in, but not very long. They were pretty much straight out there, weren't they? There was all these people... No, I don't want to spoil it for anyone if they haven't seen this episode, but they were pretty much all just bang, 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 we're out. He delayed them for 2 minutes while the others were literally going... through the snow, like, crawling through the snow, where these white walkers coming at speed. Wasn't a very good thing to... He ruined Holdor's life.
I'm just waiting for the big face-off between the white walkers and the dragons, because I know it's coming, fire and ice. Like, it's so obviously inevitable. I hope it doesn't disappoint.
Fire's going to win that, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. That's what we're hoping for. The White Walkers are absolute twats.
Because, if it's icy and there's a fire, the ice doesn't stop the fire, does it? The fire still goes. But if you put fire on some ice, the ice melts. So fire is definitely the winner.
I feel like this is a really weird mixture of like a chemistry lesson and also rock, paper, scissors.
Well, it is.
Stage in front of people like a stress dream.
What they need is a big bucket of water. What they need. That would a big bucket of water against some fire. The big bucket of water.
Back to Mr. Tumble again, yeah? Think about it.
It's literally that every time. He's already done it and then he does it again. It's literally that.
It's not his fault she's waking up early. You do know it's not his fault that she wakes up at 6:30, yeah? He's just on then. He's not even awake. Mr. Tumble is asleep on a bed of ermine, surrounded by whatever it is that he was doing the night before. having a lie in.
What do you think about Robert the robot from Mr. Tumble's house? Do you think if you had sex with Robert the robot, would that be count as cheating, or is it all right? Because he's a robot. He's a robot. And he's not a very attractive robot. Would your husband divorce you, think, if you had sex with Robert the robot?
My only thought on Robert is that he's very much not... I'm probably not his type.
I think that's true. Because he would go for it. He's got... There is a female robot. I've yet to see her yet. There's a Roberta the robot.
I think they're probably just good friends.
This guy is very excited by the robot chat. Has had to go... Has had to go... He's going off to think about Robert the robot.
Ian Lee's calling me from last week.
Look at that. That's
from a different time.
Yeah. Sorry, from 2 weeks ago. do you think it's... I had a big argument with my wife about whether having sex with robots should count as cheating.
Right. Her take, I'm guessing, was no. Yours was yes?
Yeah, I said...
Broadly,
I was talking to Victoria Corrin about it last night, and she said it was fine to have sex with robots because they're not human beings.
I mean, I think it doesn't count as cheating. It probably implies that there are some problems in your relationship that you might want to address. But, you know, it's not the same as having sex with a human.
It's just a fancy thing.
Well, it was on the internet today. They've invented one that you could do that to, I think.
I'm not satisfied with the quality of any of the robots thus far. They have to be as good as Gemma Chan in Humans. That is as far as it goes. It throws out some interesting philosophical questions, though, if you have sex with robots. I wasn't going to talk about this series, but...
But here we are. Let's talk about it.
Because, like, in the future, if you could make any robot look like any person, then you could, as a horrible, seedy person, you could choose... To make, you know, someone could choose to make a sex robot of anyone and then make pornographic films of them, and then it's who owns your image, Lauren? If someone was making a sex robot of you without your permission, who owns your image?
Well,
once you're long dead and someone says, I wouldn't have sex with Kaniki from when they were 17, I'm not sick.
Let's hope I never live to see that.
I've said too much. Should penis transplants be allowed, in your opinion?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Well, it opens a brave new, well, a tragic brave new world where it's good for like people who've lost their penis in an accident.
Yeah, exactly.
Or people who've got cancer of the penis.
Yeah.
Well, it's one of the worst cancers. It is. Why are you laughing at that? I'm only laughing at them like he's back. Now he's here. Now he heard that. Well, in the minute he heard the cancer penis stuff, got to get back for that. But what if that means like rich people, rich men in palaces could say, "Well, I fancy my penis isn't good enough. I heard Richard Herring's got an amazing penis. I'll hunt him down like an animal and then I'll get his penis and then I'll have his penis."
But then this opens up a further philosophical question, which is probably the reason that most rich men certainly make their own money and motivated to get rich in the first place. Will the billionaires and the kind of people who show their wealth off, will they ever get to that point? Maybe they'll just be like, "Now I can afford the penis transplant. That's what this was all about. No need for mansions and sports cars for me. I have a massive dick."
Yeah. Do you think if you get a penis transplant, you're allowed to choose the penis from a tray of penises, or do you just get what you're given?
I'm not an expert.
This is the choice. There's been 3 penis transplants that have taken. I'm really impressed with that. I know a lot about the penis, and I'm amazed that they've got to the stage.
Yes, I enjoyed your penis podcast.
Thank you very much. But you know, it's if you could just, you know, I mean, I know if you've, you know, you've, it's Hobson's choice, isn't it? But you should be able to choose a little bit. Well, I'd like that one.
Yeah, I imagine you get a bit of say. They're not just going to like give you an extra bit. They're not even going to discuss it with you. "No worry, we'll improvise. We've got this. You're fine." Well, and then kind of putting you under. Like, that's not how it goes.
They don't do it with livers and stuff. They go, "Do you like this liver?" They go, "You get whichever." You go, "That liver matches you, so you've got to have that liver."
You still get choice of the matter, though.
"This penis matches you." And you go, "Well, it's not. I don't like that one as much." And what if the penis...
wait for the next one to come up.
What if the penis... has like what if the penis has people say men think with their dicks, what if the penis retains the memories of the previous previous person?
How poignant.
I think like there's a lot of things to worry about before we just go,
That could be a really good book though.
Yeah,
like the penis's memories of the last person and then the new person, and that could be really moving.
Yep, good. I concur.
Booker Prize for sure.
Which celebrity death in 2016 has hit you the hardest?
Oh, God.
There's a lot to choose from.
It has been awful. I mean, Bowie was such a shock.
Yeah.
And Prince was such a shock as well. They were easily, for me, the two worst. You know, it was funny because I was thinking, you know, everybody's been saying, "Oh, 2016's like really terrible." And I looked up to see how other years had compared, and it is unusually bad. But apparently part of that is because we've got more famous people now. It's just to do with the way that media changed over the 20th century. So we have more people becoming famous all the time. So we're kind of starting to see this increase in deaths. But also, 1977 was terrible.
Yes.
Because that was the year Elvis, Charlie Chaplin, I think Groucho Marx died that year, Maria Callas. It was tons and tons and tons of people. And Charles Bukowski had written a poem about it called "It's Weird, It's Strange When Famous People Die," which was just after Elvis's death. So it's not like the worst year. 77 was worse, but pretty bad.
Well, we haven't finished this year yet, so there's still... still time. Terry Wogan, you were a big fan of Terry Wogan's, weren't you?
Oh,
well,
yeah, that was desperate, yeah.
Because I was saying this the last time, but I still can't get it into my head that he's... because he's such a familiar presence.
Yeah.
It won't sink in. All the others have sunk in, but that one won't sink in for me. Not, and I wasn't a massive fan of his. I just can't envisage a world where Terry Wogan isn't
in
there.
It. I think that's the funny thing, and that's the thing about famousness, which is weird, which is such a kind of nebulous and non-existent thing in a lot of ways. I suppose the fame isn't dead, is it? The fame's still... That's you know, the bit that's still here, along with, like, the work and stuff. It's a funny thing.
It's the worst kind of fame, though, isn't it? Posthumous fame. That's what I'm going to get. And it's not, I don't want it. I want the fame now. And all the money in the cock transplants. I want that now. I don't want to have to be dug up and then say, be given a good cock on my skeleton. Which I will do.
If you go first, I promise I won't let that happen.
Okay, that's good. Do you have any predictions for the next big celebrity death of 2016?
God, come on! Well, no, I mean, I don't, because I would never say such a thing. But I think, like everybody else who loves music, you know, you go back to the records of your kind of idols who are getting on, and it's sort of like almost like you're keeping them alive by putting them on. I don't know if anyone else has done that, where it's like, And then obviously there was, you know, last year, Joni Mitchell had been really, really ill. And I know that when we were waiting to, thankfully she got better, waiting to kind of hear that she was getting better, everybody I know was kind of like getting caught in spark on and like desperately kind of sitting over it.
Yeah.
It is that straight. It's a weird thing about, I mean, musicians especially, I think there is a loss there that is real, because people can be very kind of like dismissive of, oh, it's just the social media grief and you never knew that person and whatever. But actually, if somebody's worldview has kind of become your worldview, you've taken on that lens that they see things, the way they see things.
Yeah.
That's part, you know, it's part of, but they become part of you. So it is a real loss. It's not like you're mourning the kind of actual person, you didn't know them, but
no.
You know, there's something real about it.
There was a big thing when Muhammad Ali died. I was listening to feedback on Radio 4 and loads of people were complaining that there'd been too much coverage of Muhammad Ali's death, which is, you know, bizarre. But like, he's an historical figure, you know. I mean, he was a living historical figure, but he's our general, you know, from our lives.
Yeah.
He will be remembered in 200 years' time. And there's no complaint about, oh, it's the Queen's having another big party. It's 3 months since the last one she had. Let's do 12 hours of coverage of this significant person.
You've got to think as well, like for you know, those guys in it, that those complaints always come up. You've got to sort of think, mate, it's only a day. Do you know what I mean? It's only ever really one day that you give to a thing. And you know, luckily on six, when Prince died and when Bowie died, we were just able to chuck whatever we were going to do out the window. We made the shows up as we went along and just played their music. Mm. And that was like, it was weird because it was obviously like really, really sad, but it was also really weird kind of fun. It was, my mum was saying, she was listening to the Bowie one and she said, it's a bit like, you know, when you're on the way to a funeral in a car with like the family and someone tells a joke and you start laughing, even though you're really, really sad. It was that kind of atmosphere. So it sort of made a horrible day like a bit better in a weird way of doing that.
Well, when I die, people can play like some of my routines. That would be,
what would you like to hear? So, let me ask you a question now.
I'd like them
now.
To play the thing I've just did about penis transplants. I'd like that to be played and over again on Six Music.
That's in your deathbed
hours.
Montage, yeah? Anything else in there?
No.
No.
I don't think there'll be time. I don't think anyone will be ringing feedback going, you spent a long time on the death of Richard Herring on the 6 o'clock news today.
Depends how you go, doesn't it, Richard?
I suppose it does. Oh, I'll take a few with me, don't you worry. Got to laugh, haven't you? You'd have to laugh. Let's go back to some proper Lauren Laverne questions. It's lovely talking to you. You're very funny as well. So, talking of that, you were on the 10 o'clock show. So how did that was an amazing...
Yes, 10 o'clock live.
Yeah, 10 o'clock live. I beg your pardon. I'm thinking of Ian Lee again.
Literally everyone, even some of the people that worked on it, called it the 10 o'clock show, yeah.
But it's an amazing line of people in it. And it's this British go at having a go at a topical satire show. And it did, I mean, I don't think it quite worked, you think? I don't know.
I don't think it ever...
It quite gelled.
No, it didn't. And, you know, it was a really good experience and really brilliant. Like, I loved working with the team on it. But, yeah, you know, I don't think it kind of became everything that was everything that we kind of hoped in the execution, probably.
And how did it... Was it... It's a weekly show.
Yes.
Yeah. So were you writing your own bits on it, were you coming? Yeah.
I was working with a producer and you know, writing it. But I was more comfortable with... Actually, I think the more we went on with it, when I was allowed to be a host rather than kind of like put in more of a position of being a bit like a stand-up, like I was much less comfortable in that kind of role and much happier when I was able to do the job that I do.
Yeah, I don't. It's obviously all those people in that show are so good, but it seems to be the British thing of like, let's put loads of good things together and mash them up and see if it works. I did a show which was a sort of similar.
Like trifle, bit. You mean?
Well, it sort of is. It's, you know, because it's that's not. It,
what do we do? Custard, jelly, tinned fruit, sponge cake.
It's sure. got to work. But I wrote, one of the things, first things I wrote on was a show called Stab in the Dark, which was a sort of similar thing. It was David Baddiel, funny enough, Tracy McLeod, and Michael Gove was on it as a, just out of university.
Really?
When he was a journalist, and he did like political, I mean, he talked to like some anarchists or something. It was so embarrassingly bad. And had I known, you know, I had the chance. I've had a couple of chances to kill Michael Gove. But I had a, you know, I could have taken him out there. I'd be out of prison by now if I'd done it. And we'd still be part of Europe. This is going out after the vote. So this... but yes, I just think it's because it just you feel what is it? You know, John Oliver's gone to America as a British person and made a fantastic satirical show.
Yeah.
But I, you know, it's sort of weird within the UK where we have so much such a history of satire that that show hasn't yet. I suppose probably since That Was the Week That Was hasn't quite gelled,
yeah.
even though it's been tried many, many times.
I mean, I think the reasons that didn't quite work in the way that I'd hoped it would are probably complicated, and everybody involved and in, you know, the on-screen team, I thought it was absolutely fantastic. There's some great people on the wider team as well, but sometimes it's just like timing and when you do a thing and kind of what else is going on, and it's there's a lot of kind of luck to how these
yeah.
things cohere as well as anything else. I mean, obviously for me, I wasn't a kind of comedian. I was in there to keep the ship steady, and because it was live, make everything kind of run on time, and the bits that I was doing could kind of shrink or expand depending on what was going on. So I was doing the job that I do, and I was, you know, really, really happy to be involved.
Yeah.
But it was funny. It was, for me, it was like during a weird time because I'd just had my second baby, and, you know, we're actually having quite a hard time as a family. So it was the first thing that I'd done that wasn't like people just going, yay, this is great. Like the first time, you know, people had ever really sort of given us quite a hard time about something
yeah.
on Twitter and stuff, because all that was relatively
new. Well, I guess that was a new
well.
Thing.
Yeah, so it was kind of like, at the time, it was confusing, and I couldn't kind of really work out what was going on. And apart from anything else, I was just knackered because I had like a sort of 9-week-old baby when we started the work on the programme. But then now, looking back at it, I kind of have a different view on it. And I
yeah.
think there's probably other things going on, the reasons that, you know, it didn't quite come together.
I think partly though as well.
But you're right, we need that, like that show, that kind
yeah.
of, that it's needed, especially now. People still say, you know, people are like, we need something like that on British TV, and I think we definitely do. And there's so many, you know, great comics who
yeah.
I think could do a great job.
No,
it.
I think there are. I sort of think like often though as well that something like that show was so heralded even before, you know, publicised, wasn't it? It was billboards everywhere, and before it's even started.
Yeah, I mean,
I think like if you've got to sort of you've almost got to discover a show like that yourself, which with the people you had, I guess, was never going to happen. Because
I mean,
big names.
I actually did say that at the time. I felt like, you know, when the thing about being on a station like Six is that it's very personal to people. You know, people find it because they love music, and mostly, well, 99% of the things I do, it's that kind of thing where it's just like, you know, it's a self-selecting audience. You've come because you're interested.
Yeah.
And for me, it was the first experience of, you know, being on a billboard and this is going to be excellent. And of course, the dynamic is just immediately like, I'll tell you why it's shit. That's and that is, that. I suppose, that's sort of big mainstream entertainment in a
yeah.
nutshell. And that's never something I've really been part of, you know. So it was, in lots of ways, it was like, it was kind of good to experience that, and it fed into a lot of, you know, the decisions that I made after that. Because starting the website, I probably wouldn't have done that if that had gone really, really well.
Right.
Because I was like, it's time. I just felt like it was, it made me trust my own opinion about things more. And I was like, actually, I know a couple of things, and I'm going to start something that, you know, and have something of my own and build my own team, and I think I can kind of and so that's
yeah
that was, you know, that's been up and running a year now, but
it's a year, is it, the pools were going, and
yeah.
So that's a female, is it all female journalists, and
it's we've got one man on the team,
right.
But it's otherwise,
is it your brother again?
No. He's in the commercial team, Charlie. He's
okay.
Lovely. He's quite new. We had another one. He didn't last that long, to be fair. But it is, and yeah, so that is a women's website, although we've got lots of male users as well.
Yeah.
And multimedia, all sorts of, you know, news, politics, fashion, opinion, music, arts, culture, all sorts of stuff.
Sure.
I mean, it seems you like work very hard, and you say you've got two kids. I mean, how are you managing to? Because I'm not. I mean, this isn't me asking a woman about her kids, because I've got a kid, and how the hell do you manage to do everything? Because I find it very difficult to do anything because of the child.
Yeah,
fucking idiot child taking up my time. She's all right.
She's gorgeous. Do you know what? It just is hard, isn't it? That's the thing. And like, my husband is incredibly supportive and takes on tons and tons of childcare, and then. To an extent, because I'm freelance and because I kind of am running my own business, I can, if something, I need to be there for something, I can, and I can be a bit selective about it. And,
yeah.
You know, so I'm not going to moan about it, but it's not like there's a magic kind of solution where, like, everything's fine. It's not, it's hard, you know, it's like for anybody who's managing their, juggling a busy job and kids, it's like, you're tired a lot. Yeah. I was fucking knackered for, like, Eight years, honestly. Like, eight years. I am not kidding you. I was so tired. I used to dream about them. I used to dream that I went to work and they used to let us lie on the floor and go to sleep. Like, at my tiredest, I swear to God, I have had that dream. And then now, you know, the little one is at school, and that's been like a big change since September.
Yeah.
So it just feels like suddenly it's the people, and I can kind of say to them, well, I'm going to do this, but then I'm going to have a short day tomorrow, and, you know, I'll come pick you up from school or whatever it is.
Yeah. But you're very, I mean, I think a lot of people I have on this show are very driven, because it's very hard to become successful, but you've just, you know, from 15, you've been just getting out there and doing it and getting on with it and adapting and changing and finding, you know, then finding you can do the next thing that comes along, you take it on and you can do it.
I think I'm interested in other things and other people, though. Yeah. I think it's, my dad always used to say, like, just find a job that you like and then you never have to go to work. And I think that's totally, totally true. I really took that on board. So I just try and follow, as you know, as long as the rent is paid and, you know, the mortgage is paid, like, I just kind of think, you've got to follow what interests you, and that usually leads to stuff that is more interesting. And, yeah. You know, it's like anything when people say, oh, how do you become a presenter? I really want to become a presenter. I think wanting to be one is probably a bad start. Right. You've got to be interested in other things and other people and the people that you're working with. And I'm compulsively interested in everything. And I genuinely annoy myself with it because I can't kind of like just settle on a thing and like, okay, so now you're just like the indie one who likes the indie music, and it's like, well, I love all that, but then what about everything else, you know?
Yeah.
And that's my brain. But then also I think it's being, if you're from, you know, the kind of family that I'm from, it's really simple if your direction's just like up. You know, I think it's harder for now. I look around at like my kind of well-to-do friends and their kids and I think, well, they've got to sort of choose, you know what I mean? If you're like 15 and at school and idiot, and then you kind of like end up on Top of the Pops or whatever, you're just kind of like, okay, doing this now. And then you just kind of like, you sort of keep going as long as you can, really. And with no expectation that it's ever going to carry. I mean, I would never take any of that for granted. So it's just like, it's quite straightforward in its own sort of way.
Right. Yeah, but it doesn't happen for everyone. But I think a lot of people sit back and say, why isn't it happening to me, or why is it happening to this person, and, you know, get cross about it. And I think the problem with that is that, you know, there aren't, like you say, there sort of isn't reasons. I mean, sometimes someone gets selected for something and that thing takes off and it's just a bit of luck.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's not. But it's actually also not sitting back and wasting your time asking about it, just getting on to the next thing.
Well, that's it. You know, you can sit around all day and kind of post-rationalise about, like, oh, what did you do right, or whatever. But it's really bullshit. You know, everybody's making it up as they go along. Everybody's trying the best to get through their day and their life and to be a good person. And, you know, you just got to kind of like, I think if you know what's important to you and you know what you actually give a fuck about, that's all you need. Because beyond that, like, take that off your list, you know. And for me, it's like, it's pretty, I'm like boringly straightforward, boringly straightforward. You know, I like the same four things I did when I was 15, you know, just like mates, records, clothes, family, that's it. That's all that's on my list. So really, if you kind of got those, if those things are okay.
Yeah. Well, from your Instagram feed, it looks like you have a very nice life. So I'd, I'd quite like to. If I could just get into that through the into the Instagram feed and live in there, I'd be happy.
I'll put you on it, okay, and then you'll be in it.
And I'll be in it. And then
I'll be really meta.
And then can I move around in between it and meet Amy Schumer?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. That's my next sitcom. What was Amy Schumer like when you met her?
She was great. Was she? Yeah. Very sharp. Yes. And her and Bill Hader together was interesting. You know, that... it's funny when American, a lot of the time, American kind of comics and bands come in on radio, and radio here at BBC Radio is just not what the kind of radio landscape is in the US. So I think a lot of the time when people come in, they're Americans, their expectations are really low, you know? They think you're going to be kind of like an idiot jock and then just play some awful music. And, you know, you kind of play something they like and then are reasonably okay to talk to, and they're just like amazed. So sometimes it was one of those where they were like, huh? And then it sort of took a while to realise, oh, actually, we're in an okay place. And the listeners seem really clever. What's good? What is this? Is this a podcast?
Like... have you ever seen a ghost?
Yes. I was, I don't remember it, but... hey, yeah? He was out. So I was 2 years old and we're living in a terrace house on Danville Road, which is quite far from the barns. It was before we moved there, Richard, okay. So you'll know that.
Seaburn,
part of the world. Apparently the house, our next door neighbour had been exorcised. There'd been an exorcism.
Okay.
She'd had a spirit in, she had a priest round. And he did an exorcism, and apparently, according to my mum, I sat up in bed that night, and my little bedroom door was opposite their little bedroom door, and I sat up and went, "Who's that man?" And my mum just went, "Lie down." And then kind of went to sleep really, really terrified. But I have no memory of it, and I also don't believe in ghosts, but apparently that happened. My mum wouldn't make it up. She never tells a lie.
She might just be trying to shit you up. give you issues. Have you ever seen a Bigfoot?
Never seen a Bigfoot, no. Can neither confirm or deny.
That was going to be my big closing question. I thought that was going to
do it. Oh, sorry.
I thought that was absolutely going to do it.
I wonder who the biggest person, the physically biggest person that I've ever interviewed is. I know Big Bang Hank from the Sugar Hill Gang.
Okay.
Aptly named. He's enormous. He's
How
a
big
man
is
mountain.
He?
He's kind of probably Hordor-sized. He's like 7, you know, just shy of 7 foot. Big fella, from what I remember.
I've had Stephen Merchant on this. He's tall.
He's tall.
But I bet this other guy's broad as well. Stephen Merchant's like a stick.
I used
like
to...
a paedophile stick.
Don't say such things about...
Sorry, it's a callback. I'm a massive fan of his. I'll ask you one more question. from these new questions. If you had, this is from HelloGiggles.com. If you had the option of adopting a baby fox or a baby koala, which one would you choose?
Oh, I've got baby foxes in my garden at the minute, and they are adorable. But I would go probably koala because you'd be more popular, wouldn't you, if you had a koala. I think foxes would be lovely for a while. Babysitting a baby fox, no problem. Do you all want baby foxes in the house? I mean, I've got two sons, so it's already like being at a stag do all the time in my two little boys. So I think foxes might get a bit of a handful, but koalas are pretty chill. One of the stoner breeds of animal, aren't they?
Well, I think because eucalyptus leaves are full of, like, basically heroin for them. So as long as they're eating eucalyptus leaves,
I can get some of them. That's not a problem. We'll be able to source eucalyptus leaves.
I think they're quite vicious, though, aren't they? Anyone know about koalas? My audience is intelligent has dropped a long way. Since the more popular this show has become, the more stupid my audience has become. That is... I mean, you could just ask a question like that and someone would come up and give you a PhD
essay on it. It's one of the terrible paradoxes.
It is awful.
Terrible showbiz paradox that you're experiencing live in this moment, Richard.
This is my own question. Have you got a celebrity shag list of 5 celebrities you're allowed to have sex with and still stay married?
No, I haven't. No, I haven't.
You should get one. Who would be on there if your husband said it's okay? Because the thing is, though, because you meet loads of celebrities, so it's dangerous for him. Most people, it's like a... hypothetical.
Just hypothetical.
If you ever met Sawyer from Lost, my to my wife, if that's hers, you can have sex with him. That's what I've said to her. She's never going to meet him, but you probably have met Sawyer from Lost.
Paul Rudd would be on there.
Paul Rudd?
Yeah. Sam Rockwell.
Okay. From Moon.
From Moon, yeah. And also from, if you just Google Sam Rockwell dancing, from many, many highly watchable montages. Tom Hiddleston.
Okay.
But he's a bit young for us, really. But, you know, because he can dance as well, we'll let him on there.
Okay.
And then your man with the evil teeth, the Irish. I've got a bit of a thing.
Ricky Gervais.
Little kind of evil teeth that are actually on and off quite Gervais-ish, to be honest.
I don't know who that is. Jaws from James Bond.
It's like
Nosferatu.
It's like a small tooth in a gummy smile. That just looks like...
Mine are all robots. Mine's Robert the robot, Roberta the robot. The Gemma Chan is a robot, only as a robot. Your 17-year-old you from Kaniki is a robot. And your brother, just your brother, he's the only one that isn't a robot, but from Kaniki as well. I'm not sick. we might have to call it a day. It's been really lovely, though. I've had a very nice time. Is there anything else you'd like to say?
Me too, thank you. I'd like to issue an appeal to the scientists of the future.
Yeah.
Please do not allow any of Richard's terrible, terrible dystopian fantasies to come to pass.
It's too late. I'm in your Instagram feed and I'm making them all happen. I've transplanted a cock onto Amy Schumer. So you go back, you'll look at that and go, my past, it's been destroyed. You're burning
my beautifully, perfectly curated and filtered life.
It is beautiful. It's been fantastic to have you. Thanks so much for coming. Lauren Levoin, ladies and gentlemen. Lauren Levoin. Thank you. You have been listening to Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Rich Herring, and my guest, Lauren Levoin. The music, as always, is by Pest. Listen to it. It's nice. Also, I would like to thank everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre. I'd like to thank everyone at Go Faster Strike. I would like to thank everyone at the British Comedy Guide. I'd like to thank Ian Tunes and Ewan Chu, who also help us put these things up. I would like to, as always, I'm indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. And this is a Sky Potato Fuzz and Go Faster Strike production. Thanks for listening to Lauren Levoin and me chatting. That was nice, wasn't it? Hey, look, I'm back on tour next year, so starting in September, actually, but mainly in 2017. Go to richardherring.com/gigs, and you can find out if I'm coming near to you. Some more might be added nearer the time, so don't fret if I'm not yet coming near to you. And a lot of those tickets are on sale, so you could get well ahead of the game and start buying tickets. It's a best-of show with me doing my best, in my own opinion, 90 minutes of material. So it's a great one if you want to bring new people who've never seen me before, if you've never seen me before, or if you just want to relive those old favourites. Anyway, thanks for listening. We're back next week with more of this rubbish.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Thanks for listening. richardherring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.